Case number 13200 SJ Growers LLC seeks a special use exception to place a telecommunications tower and a variance from the maximum height requirement for a proposed structure. Section 115-194.2 and 115-210 of the Sussex County Zoning Code. The property is located on the east side of Millsboro Highway and to the north side of Bald Branch Road. The 911 address is 22311 Bald Branch Road in Millsboro. The zoning district is AR1. The tax parcel is District 333, Map 7, Parcel 23. We have zero letters of support, zero letters of opposition, and zero or two mail return. The applicant, like we said, is seeking a special use exception for the telecommunications tower and a 49-foot variance from the 150-foot maximum allowable height for a tower.
Good evening.
Let's try that one more time. One of these days I'm going to get this right. So again, for the record, John Tracy from Young Conway, Stargatt & Taylor here on behalf of the applicant Network Towers. To my left, the role of Vanna White is Andrew Peterson from DBM Engineering, RF and PE Engineer. And to my right is Sam Averna from Network Towers. They'll both be available to the extent anybody on the board has any particular questions. So. As you heard in the introduction, we are seeking a special use permit as well as a variance to construct a 199-foot tall telecommunications monopole. This includes the lightning rod as part of that overall height. The property, as you can see, is a collection of parcels that total just south of 62 acres in size. It's bisected by Route 26. As you can tell from the photograph, it is largely in farming as well as a lot of what surrounds it here. It is zoned AR1. It is adjacent, as you can see, to additional agricultural lands. We are locating the facility. I'll just move over point and then come back. That area of the property is still up against of Route 26 at the top, adjacent to existing trees, but not impacting any of the trees. There are wetlands within the trees, forested wetlands, that we're also respecting all of the buffers associated with that. The tower, as proposed, will meet the code's requirements for lighting. It'll meet the code's requirements for setbacks. It will be enclosed in, by fencing as required by the code, but as you heard, we are seeking one variance to increase the height, which I will talk about in a few minutes. As the board is aware, and T-Mobile is the principal tenant for this particular tower, it is the holder of an FCC license, which requires and gives it the right privilege and obligation to provide reliable cellular coverage in the areas in which it is licensed. In this particular area, as we've noted, as times have evolved, the demand on these cellular systems do nothing but increase. It's not just, you know, the people carrying the big box phones like Wall Street from 25 years ago, but now everybody has multiple devices, from their phones to their iPads to their laptops as well. And so it's not just the high-end professionals, but it's everybody, most particularly on the one end of the spectrum, first responders and folks trying to utilize 911 on the other end of the spectrum, all the kids that have learned how to educate post-COVID, where a lot of work is done online as well. All of this adds to the burden on the existing network. Couple that with the fact that these days most people are now ditching their landlines in favor of cell phones. I am only just now finally getting to that stage, but a lot of people have done it before me, because why pay for a landline if you have unlimited minutes on your cellular plan? As noted in the RF report that Mr. Peterson prepared, based on the CDC's analysis as of late 2024, 78% of adults and almost 87% of children currently live nationwide in wireless-only households. When you drill down into those numbers, adults 25 to 29 and 35 to 44 are both between 88 and 89% in a wireless-only household. those renting their homes. It's also roughly 88% that are relying solely on these wireless things, which adds to the demands that the network is currently facing. And then, as I've indicated to the past, that I think most of you have heard me talk about before, as you have the each new generation of smartphone, laptop, iPad, now it's not just email and phone calls, it's texting, it's downloading, it's movies, it's all the streaming services. All of this adds to the demand that the network is facing. And so even in areas where you have adequate coverage in theory, I use the example of being like at a sporting event or a concert where you know they have good service where you are, but you can't get to it because 10,000 other people are trying to do the same thing, and that has the impact of shrinking the coverage footprint, which further impacts the situation. And then finally, as I mentioned with 911 calls, it's estimated that roughly 80% of 911 calls across the country originate from cellular service. And this is also dovetailed with the fact that many of the first responders are now relying on cellular service in their vehicles with laptops and computers and other things that need to be able to connect to the internet. So all of this kind of explains the background of how the system works, and like you have in this instance where you have a significant gap in service, the carriers then do what they can to try to fill that, which means finding a property and a landlord willing to host a facility and then going through the process to get that approved. So as I mentioned here, Andy Peterson is our RF engineer, and I'm going to ask him a few questions as we're talking here. But in this particular instance, Andy, and why don't you put the current coverage map up there so people can see. We have one of those gaps in coverage that I mentioned, and it's a gap in coverage that runs along the Route 26 corridor. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And so as part of our analysis when we're looking to fill the hole, and I guess you should explain what those colors mean.
Mr. Tracy.
Yes.
We should probably have Mr. Peterson sworn in for
you. Yeah, that's fine.
You state your name and address for the record, please.
That's Andrew Peterson, Box 165, Fairview Village, Pennsylvania.
And do you swear or affirm the testimony you're about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
I do.
Thank you.
So as I was saying, this map is illustrating one of those gaps in coverage. Why don't you explain what the different colors represent on this map?
Yeah, sure. First and foremost, this is a map of the area surrounding the proposed site. I'll try to stay in the mic.
I can point.
I have a lady. Yeah, so we have the state border here, Gumbrough's down here, and then we have 24 here and 26 here, so some typical map features, roadways, municipal boundaries, et cetera. And then we have some T-Mobile specific information, which includes the existing on-air sites that are providing service. Those are indicated with the pie-shaped icons, propeller-shaped icons with the pie-shaped wedges on them. And then on top of that, we have the coverage layers that are being provided for by those T-Mobile sites. The smallest footprint being green, which it would indicate a strong in-building commercial level of service, a service threshold that could penetrate a building like this one, a more robustly built structure. And then in yellow, a bit larger footprint is an in-building residential stick-built type structure signal strength that's going to penetrate that bit lesser of a construction. And then we have in orange, then blue, we have an in-vehicle and then an on-street coverage threshold being shown. So it's going to cover you in your car and then someone out, say, walking their dog. You'll see that we have this area here. It's 1.5-2 miles here of uncovered area where we have a lack of even reliable on-street coverage for T-Mobile. And this is specific to their mid-band spectrum holding, which is their 2100 megahertz and their 2500 megahertz, where they have the vast majority of their spectrum holding. So they do have some spectrum in lower frequency ranges, which will cover, just by the nature of the physics, will cover a little bit better, but they need to have this working for their network to work efficiently, because this is where the vast majority of their spectrum holdings are. So we have this gap in coverage that they need to address. It is significant, and we can flip to the next.
Actually, let me add a couple questions. So One of the things that you look at as part of this analysis is ruling out any other structures that are within 2 miles. And there is one structure that's a mile, a little over a mile, about 1.2 miles to the south of the chosen location, which is kind of in the middle of those two spaces. We ruled that out on the one hand because that existing tower is not structurally sound enough to have any more equipment on it. It's already fully loaded. It's an older style lattice tower, and so it can't handle another one. But secondarily, it doesn't work because now you're getting too close to the site that you see just over the line in Maryland at the bottom. And I wanted you to explain to the board what's the problem when two sites are too close together.
Sure. So, yeah, because that site is about a mile, I think it's about 1.2 miles south of the proposed facility. It's right around here, closer to the Maryland border. That site being that, if we could use it from a structural perspective, dragging the site further south drags the coverage footprint along further south, it stands to reason. And it won't address the northern portion of our coverage gap. It's also the other issue, which John alluded to, is that it's going to provide overly redundant coverage with the site to the south. So both of those aspects would cause issues with utilizing that facility. And then pile on top of that the structural inability of that facility to accommodate the T-Mobile array, and we just can't use it.
Okay, so we've elected to go with this new site, which you can go ahead and flip the maps and show the after picture here, and you can walk the board through what the after picture is showing. Probably after the color education is self-explanatory, but.
Proposed facility on the air with the antenna center line is proposed of 190 feet. You see that this puzzle piece fits nicely with the existing issues in the network. We're now providing that strong in-building coverage to the vast majority of that gap there, and then filling in with in-vehicle certainly along 26 all the way down to the Maryland border. So it's an ideal location for a new facility that's going to address T-Mobile's need here.
And then one other aspect of these applications, in addition to, as we discussed, ruling out anything within 2 miles, and I think candidly, once you get more than about a half mile away, you're really starting to impact coverage. I know 2 miles is the standard in the code, and it's a standard that goes back to when the code was adopted. But one of the other aspects that we're required to demonstrate is that we fall below the FCC standards for purposes of emissions from these towers. And in this instance, you did a report that concluded that we would actually be less than 0.04%, if I'm not mistaken, of the FCC limitation. So if you could just explain to the board how you calculate that.
Sure. The findings are an electromagnetic exposure analysis that I authored, dated April 7th, that's done utilizing the FCC prescribed formulas for computing the anticipated electromagnetic emissions from a facility like this, using some basic physics formulas and then a whole host of upper limit assumptions, including maximum power output, 24/7, 365 exposure, 100% ground reflection, and some other exaggerating factors. We find that the maximum exposure through modeling using those FCC prescribed formulas would be 0.04%, so well below the FCC standards in all locations of public access, including at the very base of the tower.
And then just confirming as part of the statutory requirements, and then there's one more thing I want to come back to. This tower will be lighted in accordance with the Sussex County Code, although not being required to be lighted by the FAA, correct?
Correct.
And we don't have any, there are no conflicts as far as the FAA is concerned with the tower in general?
No.
Okay. And then lastly, because we're also asking for a variance, so I wanted you to expand on the 21 megahertz issue a little bit more. Because that's one of the main reasons that's driving us to the 199 feet. I wanted you to just explain to the board what that means, what that 2100 megahertz means, and why it needs to be at that 195, I guess, as a center line.
Sure. Yeah, some of the other providers that have a bit more spectrum in the lower bands, the 600, 700, and 850 megahertz range, they are not as encumbered by the propagation characteristics of the mid-band. So when we get above a gigahertz, you know, to the 2100 megahertz and 2500 megahertz ranges where T-Mobile has, as I said, the vast majority of their spectrum, just the pure physics of how radio waves propagate, the higher frequencies don't travel as far as the lower frequencies. But for T-Mobile's network to operate, because that's where most of their resources are, they need to have that coverage footprint at 2100 megahertz and above. So you can see with the proposed reliable coverage at 2100 megahertz, we are able to make this work. It's you know, a nice puzzle piece that fits in there. It doesn't leave gaps to the north or south of the site, but it's not with a whole lot of margin that we're able to do that. So if we were to shorten the tower, naturally that coverage footprint will shrink, and then we will be opening up gaps to the north or south. So it's always in the best interest of the provider to design with the absolute minimum height necessary to meet their coverage needs. We don't want to overbuild and then provide that overly redundant coverage that I talked about earlier. That's not great for the network, but the flip side is we don't want to underbuild and then leave gaps to the north or south or anywhere in the areas of that are being targeted for coverage improvement. So that's why we need the additional height here.
And then, obviously, if you reduce the height and you create those gaps, you also open up the door to the potential for more towers to fill those gaps.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's all I have. Does anybody have any questions for Andy before he takes the 10-foot walk to sit down?
Any questions from the board? Mr. Sharp?
I have none. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then just to confirm, just from some of the statutory requirements, we talked about the lighting, we talked about the fencing. It will be designed to accommodate at least three other co-locators on this tower. It will have warning lights every 50 feet as required by code. The compound that's going to hold the facility is a 60 by 60 compound, so it's roughly 3,600 square feet, as I mentioned, tucked towards the trees on the upper right-hand side of the property there. It will be accessed via a gravel access drive from Route 26 there. As I mentioned to you before, these things, once they're constructed, they really just sit there and do nothing other than provide covers. They don't tax county resources. There's one trip in and out about every 6 weeks for diagnostics and things of that nature, so they don't have any impact on traffic as well. I did mention that we are also seeking the variance to increase the facility to 199 feet. As you heard Mr. Peterson talk about, this height is critical to the application, as reducing the height will not only impact the effectiveness of this particular tower, but it will also open up the door to potentially more towers in this area to fill the gaps. Again, as some of you have seen me in the past, and as Andy just indicated, we don't build to 250 feet or 300 feet just because, or 200 or 150. We're filling in, as he mentioned, a puzzle piece. Building it taller doesn't accomplish anything if you don't need to go to that height. So we're trying to find the height that bridges the gap and provides the coverage without going too high, or also without going too low. So again, as I mentioned, this is being driven by the needs generated by the FCC and the bandwidth that T-Mobile is licensed on. So there's two types of relief we're looking for here. The first is a special exception. As the board is aware, that standard is that the impact or the approval of this facility will not substantially affect adversely the uses on adjacent or neighboring property. As our Supreme Court and Superior Court have determined with the AT&T case a few years back down in the Bethany Beach area, the word substantially is not included by accident. You can have an adverse impact, it just cannot be a substantially adverse impact. And in this particular instance, I don't think there is any impact. There is a gap in coverage that needs to be addressed, and it also has capacity concerns in this particular area. We have ruled out the only tall structure that was in 2 miles of this location based both on its structural capability to hold the facility as well as the redundant coverage that it would provide. As I mentioned, there is no adverse on impact adjacent properties. They create no noise or noxious odors. It does not create a burden on county or municipal services, sewer, water, schools, things of that nature, and it doesn't generate any traffic. People don't always love these things, but one thing we can say for certain is people love their devices. As long as people love their devices, these towers are the way that you make them work. You hear every now and then conversations about other types of technology that may be able to take the place of these things. I don't think there's any of that on the horizon, but the county code has already anticipated that. If in some reason in the future there's no need for the tower, it needs to be removed within 6 months of it going offline, so to speak. So we certainly do not believe that there's any substantially adverse impact with regard to this facility. Excuse me. With regard to the variance that we're seeking, it's kind of an interesting one, but I think some of you have seen me ask for this variance before at different heights. It's an area variance, so it's rooted in the quick check standard and the aspects of the state code. It's a five-part standard. I think we meet each of these in the kind of the interesting way that these facilities operate. Uniqueness of the property. The variance is not tied directly to the property. Cell tower applications, as the board is aware, are somewhat unique in the context of land use approvals because they generally coexist with other uses on the property that are being there for the primary purpose, in this instance, agriculture. Because they take up so little space on the property, they're a great companion use or accessory use. They don't interfere with the primary use. However, because of the nature of these telecommunication facilities, they do not have the luxury to go wherever you see in a particular picture to move it because you need to find first a property that's in the area where you've actually got the deficiency in service. And then secondly, you need to find a willing landlord who wants to host the particular facility, and not everybody does. So there's a limited pool that we're fishing in order to find these properties. So it's permitted on the property, but in this instance, it requires a certain height to function at its appropriate and designed level. As this is a height variance, it's not tied specifically to the property, but more towards the radio frequency needs to meet T-Mobile's FCC requirement to provide reliable service in this particular area of Sussex County. Has been demonstrated in the design reports and through Mr. Peterson's testimony, a tower of this height is necessary to achieve that. And as his report notes on page 3, the proposed antenna height is the absolute minimum acceptable to achieve a high percentage of the site's design goals. Any decrease in the height of the proposed facility will significantly diminish the effectiveness of the proposed site. Secondly, not created by the applicant. This request has not been created by the applicant, but instead by the FCC requirements and the demand for service in this area. T-Mobile provides a service, and there are many consumers, both permanently located in this area, working in this area, and traveling through this area, and they put on the demands and service that require there to be a new facility in this area. So again, with the need for reliable service, the demands in the area, and the location of the property within the designated search area, those three factors combined for the fact that this needs to go here. The minimum variance, as you heard Mr. Peterson talk about, and I added to it, we don't look to build any higher than we have to. It's more expensive if you go higher, but we're also trying to make the puzzle work. It's also interesting to note that 150-foot number has been in the code, I think, since the code was adopted, and I'm not sure that there was any particular science behind that 150-foot number. I can tell you that it does work in a lot of occasions. I've been here many times for a 150-foot tower, and it works, but there's times when it doesn't. This is one of those, and you've heard Mr. Peterson testify, it's really driven by the spectrum by which T-Mobile broadcasts. Will not alter the essential character. Again, these are permitted uses with special use permits, and they're largely, as you can see, agricultural in use. We're locating it adjacent to the trees at the top there, but it is a low-intensity use that fits in well with other low-intensity uses while also providing service excuse me, in a heavily traveled corridor. The last standard is the cannot otherwise be developed. And again, this is interesting because it can be developed, but it can't be developed in a fortune that actually functions. If you want to have reliable service, if you want to have FCC compliance service, the height that we're asking for in this instance achieves that. And as I mentioned, it can't just be moved anywhere to try to lower that number, because you need to find willing landlords, and it needs to be within a certain area in order to make it work. So I think we've satisfied all of the standards. Obviously, Mr. Averno and Mr. Peterson are here, more than happy to answer any additional questions.
Are there any further questions from the board?
Have we spoken to the neighbors, or have been around the neighborhood, just to make sure that everybody's in agreement with them?
We have not. There aren't, as you can see, it's mostly agricultural around us. There's non-development housing in there, but no, I can't tell you that I went and knocked on doors. I know the county didn't receive anything, but.
And second, there's a backup generator, I'm assuming, for this. It'll be in an enclosure or a low decibel in case there, in the future, is a neighborhood or something built around.
Correct. It. As was noted in the materials that Mr. Averna submitted, the generator runs at about the same decibel level as residential air conditioning. So,
excellent. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Sharp?
Yeah, I just have two. The height variance. I know this site isn't far from the Maryland line. Are the towers in the Maryland side, are they taller?
The next closest tower is actually 199 feet as well. So the same height is what we're asking. I believe that's one to the south, just over the line in Maryland. If you look at this, it's the one at the bottom in the center.
That's what I was thinking, that you had mentioned that, and I thought, well, that's probably, if it may have something to do with the fact that Maryland may have different height limits than Delaware does.
I don't know. I can't speak to what that county does. I've done some towers in Cecil County, and I've done some in the town of Elkton. Everybody's got a different requirement. Some settled on 200, some settled on 150 as that height. But I don't think it, again, it wasn't driven by science, because when these codes were adopted, these things were also brand new. It's not like the Midwest, where they're 400 or 450 feet, which you see in like Kansas and Oklahoma, mm-hmm. things like that.
And then you've made some statements. Do you have somebody to affirm your
yeah.
statements? I don't know if Mr. Peterson is going to do
he's
that.
He's a PE, so he can, to the extent that I offered any testimony beyond just your RF, but also your PE knowledge, was everything they indicated true and accurate to the best of your knowledge?
Yes.
I have no further questions. Thank you.
Any other questions from the board? Is there anyone present who is in favor of case number 13200? Is there anyone present who is in opposition of case number 13200? There are no further questions from the board. I will close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
I'll just note to the board, we kind of have three different things here. We have the special use exception, so you have that standard, but we also have the standards for a cell tower under 115-194.2. So that has to be considered as part of any motion regarding the special use exception. And of course, we have the variance standards. Just thought I'd remind you.
We need some more time to think about it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion. Move that we approve case number 13200 for SJ Growers LLC for the special use, for the request of special use exemption pending a final written decision based upon this record made during the public hearing because the proposed use of this will not substantially affect adversely the uses of neighbors or adjacent properties.
And Mr. Lovengood, do you also believe that it meets the standards in 115-194.2?
I do.
Make that part of your motion.
How do you make that part of my motion?
Thank you.
So approving in all parts?
That's part of the special use exception standard. We just have to make some findings regarding that, cell towers.
I second that motion.
I have a motion and a second. Mr. Kingery?
Aye.
Mr. McClure?
Aye.
Dr. Hitchens?
Aye.
Mr. Lovengood?
Aye.
And I too. So with a vote of 5-0, case number 13200 has been approved.
That was just for the special use.
For the special use.
We still have the variance, Mr. Chairman.
That's why, okay. Yep. I was asking if we had done that for all of them.
Now, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion.
Go ahead.
That we approve case number 13200 for SJ Growers LLC for the variance that they're requesting. I move that the requested variance pending a final written decision based upon the record made during this public hearing, and for the following reasons. The property has unique physical conditions because the property, actually it's a vertical limit is what we're looking for, so that will not exponentially or practically difficult. The difficulty is due to such this conditions. Due to such physical circumstances or conditions, there is no possibility that the property can be developed in strict conformity with Sussex County Zoning Code, and the variance is therefore necessary to enable the reasonable use of the property. The exceptional practical difficulty has not been created by the applicant due to the vertical need of this. The variance will not alter the essential character of the neighborhood nor substantially or permanently impair the appropriate use or development of adjacent property, nor be detrimental to public welfare. The variance represents the minimum variance necessary to afford relief and represents the least modification of the regulation at issue.
A second.
A motion and a second. Mr. Kingery?
Aye.
Dr. Hitchens?
Aye.
Mr. McClure?
Aye.
Mr. Lovengood?
Aye.
And I too. So will they vote of 5-0. Case number 13200 for the variance for the maximum height requirement has been approved.
Thank you.
Have a good evening.